Are you looking for a podcast where you can hear from real people regarding their real dental drama? If so, then you've come to the right place. Join hosts Bethany Petty and Dr. Rena Kuba as we dive into the solutions we've created and the mistakes we've made while managing dental drama. Let's get started. Happy Monday, everybody. Thanks for joining me today. I wanted to take today's episode to provide a little bit of a recap. Dr. Kuba and I have spent the last 3 weeks diving into various aspects of treatment acceptance. And in the last episode, last week, we really focused on practical takeaways for the practice owner. I thought it might be helpful to span back just a little bit further and provide you guys with my top 10 treatment acceptance tips. I do hope that this will be a nice recap to what we've been talking about, but that you may also pick up some new tips and tricks to try and to even train your team on. So I'm going to dive right in. My number one treatment acceptance tips, and by the way, these are in no particular order. They're all important. I couldn't pick one to overemphasize. These are just going to go from top to bottom, but please know it's like 1A, 1B, 1C. They're all important. So number one, discover the patient's motivation. In my opinion, after all the years of dentistry that I've been in, we spend way too much time focusing on educating the patient, and we don't spend enough time listening to the patient. There are so many times that they provide clues by what they're sharing and how they're sharing it, and we just don't pay attention to these things. We think that we can win the patient over just by being amazing, but the fact of the matter is, most times, patients are making a decision that costs money, and they need to feel good about it when they decide to move forward with treatment. So you've got to figure out what brought them to your office in the first place, what brought them to your particular chair, what's keeping them in your chair. There's a variety of motivations that we have when we're choosing to make a financial, medical, slash dental decision. Sometimes that's just history. You know, my parents had horrible tooth pain. They were always in pain and always having to make urgent visits to the dentist. I don't want that for myself, or I don't want that for my child. So the fear of pain or not being comfortable could definitely be a motivator. It could be aesthetics, like, hey, I'm just not happy with my smile. Or it could be as simple as, I don't like the color of this tooth. It could be a very simple aesthetic reason, but it's the main motivation as to why they're sitting in your chair. So it's comfort usually, aesthetics, function, meaning I just want to be able to eat a steak and I can't do that right now. Or I just want to be able to bite into an apple and I can't do that right now. And that lends itself to function. Maybe their goal is just a quality of life function that they want with their mouth or their child's mouth. And then sometimes it's just, I want my teeth to last a long time. So I want to prevent anything that could cause me from losing my teeth that could be wrapped up in fear and anxiety. I'm so afraid that I'll have to have a tooth extraction one day that I want to do everything in my power to prevent that from happening. So it could be any one of these things or more. But the main thing is we've got to learn to listen to what the patient's saying as their motivation for coming in. Now, you could do this as simple as asking them. It sounds overly simple, but you could literally ask your patient in the chair or have your team member ask your patient, what is your goal for today's visit? Or to span longer term, when you think of your oral care in 5 years from now, what do you desire for your mouth or your smile? get the patient to think about this and, more importantly, get them to verbalize this. It's important that as they begin to share their goals and their motivations, it's important that we show them that we're actively listening. If you feel confused, repeat back what you've heard and see if you've gotten the motivation correct. So that's tip number one, discover the patient's motivation. Number two, on the flip side, discover the one or two things that may prevent that patient from moving forward with his or her treatment. Maybe cost really is a barrier for them. They don't have the funds, they don't have the credit, they don't know how to get what they want. What can you do to help that patient figure it out? It could be that the barrier is fear. They hate dental work and they're nervous about anything related to somebody being in their mouth. What can you do to help them with that barrier? It could be time. I'm just too busy to take part in this right now. Whatever the case may be, try to ask questions that get you to what is the patient's barrier. Once again, this could be as simple as simply asking the patient the question. We've talked a lot about your treatment today. May I ask what might prevent you from moving forward with this plan? The patient usually will let you know, and if they don't, think back on the conversation and see if you can figure out any barriers that they mentioned while you spoke with them about the treatment. Tip number three. Resist the urge to over-educate. I cannot emphasize this enough. Most of the time, we do not win our patients over by educating them. We win them over by listening and really figuring out what they want and then doing everything in our power to get them what they want. The more we talk about how beautiful this crown is going to be, or how wonderfully straight the teeth are going to be, or how that implant is, it's going to last you a lifetime. As much as that information may be helpful, we often tend to lead with that in hopes that that education wins over the patient. What we need to do is flip the order. Focus on the patient's motivation, the patient's barrier, and then we tweak our messaging to give the patient what they want. It doesn't mean that we resist educating. We just need to simplify the education process. In most situations, the patients do not need all of the wonderful details that we are sharing with them. We can simplify it, streamline it, and help them to understand the overarching idea of their treatment plan rather than every nitty gritty detail. Tip number four. Any one of my consulting clients out there should know this one. It's what I call the scheduling first mentality. And what that means is so often we spend just this painstaking effort in getting the patient where we want them to move forward and to get this treatment for themselves, and then we throw up this huge barrier right in front of them. We throw up a treatment plan or a financial arrangement. So before they've even scheduled the appointment, we are putting a mountain of barriers in front of them. My philosophy is if we have gone through this conversation, figured out what the patient wanted, figured out the barrier, problem solved all that, that patient should be teed up and ready to schedule their appointment before reviewing the finances. So I always say, give it a go. Move that patient straight into scheduling mode. Hey, I heard you're ready to replace that tooth. Fantastic. Let's get you scheduled. Remind me, do you prefer morning or afternoon? And then we move the conversation straight from the clinical dialogue directly into scheduling, because that's what the doctor teed everybody up for. And we need to keep that train of thought moving and get the patient to what they desire, which is an appointment to get that done. I can't tell you how many times I say this and people tell me it won't work. Nobody's going to schedule without seeing the financials. And
I wish I could have an actual percentage, but I would say it is at least 9 out of 10 times that when I go back to my consulting clients and I ask, how did it go? They're blown away by the fact that most people schedule without seeing those finances. Why? Well, this is the way life functions, right? Very few doctors, when you go into their medical building, give you an estimate of the visit before you get started. We are very accustomed to the doctor says, I need this and I want this, and now I'm going to schedule. And at some point, the finances come up after that. So I would strongly encourage you to try. Trust me and try the schedule first mentality. Schedule the patient right after the clinical conversation and then move into the financial presentation. If you have a patient that says, I can't schedule this unless I know how much it's going to cost, absolutely put the pause button on scheduling and turn right into the financial presentation. So we're not resisting presenting the financials. We're just trying to put them in their appropriate place. Tip number 5, listen to your financial coordinator. So we've done all this work in the operatory to get this patient primed and ready to move forward with the treatment that he or she needs. And then we turn them over to Sally, our financial coordinator, and we just trust everything's gonna go great. Unfortunately, very few practice owners take the time to listen to how the financial presentation goes. I would strongly encourage you to take time, even if it's just one time a week, to just listen. Hang outside that financial coordinator's office or stand up at the front office while the checkout coordinator is presenting treatment and arranging the financials. Because I can guarantee you, almost every time you listen, you'll find something that your financial coordinator could have done just a little bit better. Again, we've got to be careful with how we deliver this feedback. We want that financial coordinator to know that they're doing a great job, but that we as an office are working on our treatment acceptance, and her role is critical in that. So you're going to be listening from time to time and providing coaching and feedback. You can even take it to the next level and provide your financial coordinator with sales books, with podcasts that focus on how to discuss numbers with patients. You can support your financial coordinator in a variety of ways, but it starts with you listening to her and giving coaching and feedback in a very productive and encouraging way. Number 6, advocate for your patient. So many times we have patients that are sitting in the chair and they want better health. They want their teeth to look a certain way. And what we do is we tend to dismiss some of the comments that they make and focus on what's absolutely clinically necessary. I want you to recognize that in this moment, when that patient is in your chair, you have an opportunity to advocate for him or her. That means you put the hat on of, what do I want for this patient? I want great health. I want a great smile. I want her to grow in confidence. How can I do that? By advocating for her. So this may mean that you're bringing up things that she hasn't even considered for herself. Or maybe you are listening so well that you picked up on that little comment about how she's been embarrassed to smile lately. And we could easily gloss over that and focus on the chipped tooth in the front that she needs to have repaired. Or we can take a moment and we could say, hey, you made a comment. Tell me more about this embarrassed to smile comment that you made. Tell me about it. And then we listen and we go, you know what? Let's figure out how to make you confident in your smile. And we begin to advocate for the patient. I almost view this like a personal trainer. If we were to step into the gym, what kind of personal trainer would that trainer be if they didn't push you to do things for yourself that you want to do, but didn't necessarily know how to do it? We are in the same boat in the dental field. We want to push our patients towards prevention and towards treatment options that we know are truly going to benefit them. And again, all of this should be done in a very ethical and patient-centered way, not practice-centered. So advocate for your patient. Next tip, I don't know what I'm on. I think it's number 7. Consider the patient's personality. Dr. Koop and I have spent a lot of time over the years talking about patients' personalities. I would strongly encourage you to go back and listen to some of our episodes on personalities. We have an episode in particular called Patients' Personalities, and we dive into the deep end talking about how these personalities should really impact our communication. If you've got a super type A choleric, they need you to be a quick decision maker, to narrow down your verbiage, to just focus on the core essentials, and they need you to be efficient in that appointment. So it is important that when you have a choleric in your chair, you adjust your communication to that patient. We can go the opposite end of the spectrum, and when you've got a sparkly, fun, life of the party sanguine, it's important that you focus less on the dentistry and more on the relationship and the connection with that patient. All this to say, treatment acceptance is best received when we attend to that patient's personality and adjust our communication to fit their communication style. Next on the list is, I believe, number 8. I'm losing track here. I know I've got 10, but they're all important. Remember, all number 1. Next is help to solve financial hurdles. Dr. Koop and I spent an extensive amount of time talking about this in our last 3 episodes. It is critical that we recognize the financial barrier that so many of our patients make. And it is incredibly important that our team is confident in communicating about the treatment options that we have available. Please don't underestimate the importance of financial impacts in a patient accepting treatment. Take the time to ask questions. Something as simple as when you ask your question about, is there anything that might prevent you from this treatment plan? If they say, well, I gotta find the money, take that as a clue and come back to that, or have your financial coordinator come back to that and say, hey, Dr. Smith mentioned that you're going to have to coordinate some money. Is there anything that I can do to help with that? Or are there any options that I can talk about with you that might make this easier for you? Attend to the financial barriers and try to solve them. Be creative with your solutions. And again, I'd encourage you to go back and listen to the last 3 weeks in order to get a better idea of how to do this. Number 9, include the decision maker. This is especially relevant in pediatric environments. If the mom brought the kid, but the dad is the decision maker, you really don't need to unpack the whole treatment plan without dad present, either physically or on the phone. So just save yourself the time, pause and ask mom, hey, I know that you mentioned the dad is really involved in little Johnny's care. Why don't we go ahead and phone him in while I go over this treatment plan with you? You don't want to ask, would you like to get dad on the phone? Because most of the time they'll say no. You want to encourage it in a very gentle way. Let's say the same for a husband and wife. You've got the husband in the chair. He's made multiple comments throughout the appointment about how his wife made him make this appointment, and now you're about to unpack a treatment plan. It is critical that you pause and say, hey, we're about to dive into your treatment plan, and I would love for you to take a moment to get your wife on the phone. I bet she's going to have some questions for us, and I want to be able to answer those here in the moment. It almost never works when a patient leaves the practice, goes home and talks to the decision maker, and then somehow comes back with a yes. That is very rare. So we need to take the time to include that decision maker in the conversation. The last thing is help the patient get what they want. At the end of the day, we are medical dental providers. We are there to take care of these patients, but we also have the luxury of making sure that the patients in our chair are getting what they want. So it could be aesthetics, it could be function, it could be longevity, it could be just removing the worry of having something wrong with their teeth. But we are the conduit for that. We are the only ones that can provide them with their dental desires. Make sure that you remember you've got an opportunity as a dental practice, as a dental team. You've got the opportunity to positively impact somebody's life by getting them, helping them to get the treatment that they may not even know that they want. But after their conversation with you and after you listened so well to them, they've formalized an idea of what they want, and you're in the place of helping them get it. It's such an exciting role. I can't talk about this enough. It's one of my favorite subject matters. I do want to encourage you to talk with your team. Make sure that treatment acceptance and helping patients get what they want is a priority to your whole team. No matter how busy you are, your job is to advocate for that patient and help them get what they want. I hope you'll take these top 10 tips and apply them in your practice and encourage your team to apply them as well. Have a great week.
Thanks for joining the conversation today. We hope that you are comforted in knowing that you are not alone, but we also hope that you're walking away with some really great tips and tricks to try in your practice. We value your feedback, so please take a few moments to rate and review the podcast. Finally, we want to make sure that we're covering the topics that matter to you. So track us down on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and let us know what topics you want us to cover. As always, please know that we are rooting for you today as you manage your dental drama.